The Gaming Guru Podcast. He's in the best gaming podcast in the world. Boo baby.
Another week, quite a chock-a-block full week of news things. Obviously, with E3 coming along, it's the time of speculation and news in the gaming industry, and we are here to chat through some of them. And this week, we're also going to talk about bosses. For joining us. As always, I'm Gareth, and joined with my beautiful co-host Tim Lester. And let's kick off. What's in the news at the moment?
Yeah, man. So, I mean, like, the biggest sort of thing that kind of, like, hit the internet yesterday was... maybe not yesterday at this point in time.
When it happened
was the new Death Stranding trailer. Was, like, playing on a loop on Twitch for a while this week. And so we checked that out. I didn't actually expect something out of Kojima, like, this soon. I thought they'd maybe probably save it for the, you know... for Sony's conference coming out later this year,
I mean, for one, we know that Sony's not going to be at E3. Part of it might be, in terms of the news cycle, there's going to be so much news and snippets and everything that comes out of E3, and with Sony not being there, it might be a case of going, you know, let's spike some interest in our story beforehand, and then maybe some a little bit afterwards. But yeah, it's certainly the biggest news, I'd say, at the moment in terms of new releases. I didn't expect to see as much of both the story and the gameplay as we did. I'm still waiting for someone to sit down frame by frame and analyze it like they do with some of these trailers, because there's a lot goes on.
Yeah, it was such a huge dump of information. Yeah. And, like, you know, when you think it's over, like, there's more.
Yeah, and just as it ends, like, I thought it's the Fade to Black, Death Stranding, and then the date, and you go, oh, okay, cool. And then you look and, oh, there's still 2 minutes left in this video. Like, what's going on?
So what I do know is, like, Hideo Kojima, like, cuts all these things himself. The one for the last E3, he was cutting that like the night before, I believe. It was one of his stories.
It's not perfect yet. It's not perfect. Right? Keep changing.
It's so on brand for him as well. You know how he likes to have his name like
every
title screen on this. He's just the absolute brains behind this project. So
he wants you to know about it as well.
Exactly, he wants you to know about it. So we got like a huge amount of information dump. We have an idea of sort of the political landscape. They were talking about reconstructing or reconnecting America, make America whole again. You know, so there's definitely that. In previous Death Stranding information dumps, we've seen these holes, these craters that appear. They've given a name to that now, void outs. We know that there's a connection between those void outs and something that's referred to as a BT.
In the
trailer, which is sort of like these floating, gooey, like half invisible.
Which I'm speculating is people the stranded dead. You know, like these kind of people who are just stuck in this void or whatever, like between the two.
Between dimensions or between realms or through time.
And it sounds like that there are this like kind of cultists who, kind of being nihilistic or whatever, they don't mind causing these like tears to happen, you know, these kind of connections between the dead world or whatever. And then it seems like the main character can connect or at least sense these things through these bridge babies.
Through bridge babies, yeah. So we had an idea that the babies were important in terms of how they help the sort of stealth traversal in the game, because what it looks like is to get from point A to point B through, let's say, an area that's populated with these BTs, you'd have to navigate through obstacles that are invisible. And if you get grabbed or caught by them, you're kind of pulled into...
Yeah, because we seem to get sucked into this, like, looks like a tar pit almost of, like, just gooey blackness.
In the first trailer that came out, was it in 2017, I believe? It was the first sort of like eight and a half minute trailer that showed a bunch of gameplay.
It just looked like him walking with piles and piles and piles of like suitcases.
Yeah, there was a sequence where you had a partner who was caught by the goo and kind of pulled down, and then he took out the baby and gave it to him, and like when he disconnected the baby, his little like, you know,
umbrella thing, sort of umbrella dude, like,
stopped working. Yeah. And as soon as Sam, Norman Reeves' character, plugged that in, his little blinky thing started working. So there's definitely sort of like a battery for that thing.
Yeah.
And which is interesting because the opening sequence of this trailer, we see Mads Mikkelsen sort of like singing a lullaby to one.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's very...
And you're seeing it through what looks like an amniotic sac type of thing. It's
the POV from the bridge baby. Yeah, just so much information we get. So it looks like there's going to be some kind of... There's a political sort of war going on between those trying to rebuild the American government. There's even a... They even connote to the president, actually.
Yeah, because it looks like the Oval Office, but it's this woman who clearly is sick because it's like
not well.
Bald with the stereotypical like cancer bandana and sitting in like a very expensive looking like hospital bed.
Yes.
From all the shots you've ever seen of the Oval Office, looks like that. Mm. You know, the big kind of bay windows and massive curtain with an American flag in the room.
Yes. So we have that on the one side. I think
he even refers to like, you'll be the president of jack shit.
Yeah. So we have that on the one side, and then we have this terrorist sort of separatist group, militant separatist group, referred to as terrorists, who I believe the one with that skull mask, I'm pretty sure that's Troy Baker's character.
Okay.
On the other side,
you actually see his character, even when they flash later on, they show the names and a shot of the characters.
Yes.
His is very quick. You'd have to freeze frame to be able to see it.
It's very quick. But in the first trailer, he takes off it. He has his mask on. You see the skull thing. And, you know, and in this one, he takes the mask off. So I think that's him. That's Troy Baker's character. So what it seems is like this terrorist group is kind of trying to... So there's some kind of like, you know, event that's changed the landscape of the world. One's trying to rebuild and the other one's trying to kind of, he's like, well, you know, we need to adapt and evolve to this new environment. So a lot of crazy stuff going on there. We got the toxic/chocolate rain as well that they're...
Those guys just, they're chasing him and then all of a sudden it starts raining and they're like, I'm out.
Fuck this, dude. Yeah. They're like Kryptonians. They're carry no umbrellas. Like, nah, dog, I'm just...
Cancel Christmas. It's raining.
Yeah. So I mean, that's about as much as I can talk about. About that, I know there are going to be plenty of videos coming out during the week of people kind of like really digging into it and grabbing as much as they
speculating
can.
Speculating and being 90% wrong, but 10% will be on brand and no one will even know.
Yeah, but I think also like a good sort of a smart move, like getting out ahead of all the E3 stuff that really creates sort of like a very cluttered landscape of gaming news.
Cutting through during E3 is so difficult.
Yeah, so definitely then.
And then the other one, this will be announced at E3, but they're already kind of like teasing, is there's going to be an Avengers game by Square Enix and Eidos Montreal, which is pretty much the Tomb Raider team, as far as I understand. I don't know if that speaks to what type of game it is, because to be honest, the Tomb Raider games have kind of started to become all-encompassing. You know, like they have action, they have storyline, they have, you know, adventure and traversal and all that. So as to what type of game it is, it could be a third-person action game. It could be a, who knows, Battle Royale for all I know.
I'm quite excited for this one because from what I understand, Marvel is really dedicated to... using their IPs and selecting, you know, studios to create kind of like blockbuster games.
Yeah,
you know, we got the last one, we got Marvel's Spider-Man, so it's branded Marvel Spider-Man. This one is branded Marvel's Avengers.
Yeah, so
it's kind of on the same track in terms of like the next game in this sort of, game universe, you could say, Marvel's like video game universe. That kind of sets it apart from the other sort of Marvel games that came before it. This is sort of the next like AAA Marvel title.
And you're wondering how much creative control they have in terms of that process because, it's a little bit of a tangent, but I don't know if you saw when George R.R. Martin was talking about what's next for him and Game of Thrones and all that. He's talking about how he is actually consulting with From Software on a video game.
Wow.
And you're going like, whoa, that'd be so dope. Like
well, you got the king of world building.
Yeah, exactly.
With these other people who know how to put these amazing, like, deep worlds 100%. into video games.
And seeing this overlap a lot of, like, you've had for a while movie studios producing games. You look at Warner Brothers, for example. But now it feels like there's almost this overlap to go like, rather than us try and do what you do, it's like there's this consultative process. Because I know that Marvel were quite involved with Spider-Man, for example, just to make sure that it was like on brand and it had the right feel, like the comic books and the movies do. So, I mean, it'd be interesting. I know very little about this Avengers game, except that it's Square Enix, Eidos. It'll be announced at E3, so very excited.
Yeah, I know that... So the practice that Marvel has, which I think kind of sets them apart from the other studios that have tried to sort of build their own brands around a cinematic universe, for instance, is just the way that Kevin Feige knows how to identify and groom talent. You know, he identifies talent and he knows how to kind of help to grow that talent to really get the best out of them.
Yeah.
And I feel like it's... that we're going to get the set, we're going to get that, but with the games as well.
Yeah.
They're really good at eyeing this out and pushing the project in the right direction and giving help and aid where needed. And it's interesting they're going with Square Enix as well, and particularly Eidos. I do feel that we're probably going to get a game that has elements of open world. We're going to have sort of action adventure, third person. Like, they have all that infrastructure already in their toolkit that they've, you know, built themselves from the ground up and that they share between the studios. And it would just seem like a shame not to make use of that. The systems for inventories, for talent trees, for...
I remember Square Enix is also the Just Cause series.
Yes.
And so, like, in terms of big, destructible environments and, completely, you know, free play sort of thing. So, I mean, they have their wheelhouse, you know, got quite a broad wheelhouse. I want to say almost, other than perhaps Ubisoft, probably one of the most diverse kind of in terms of
in terms of the portfolio and the studios that they have under their wing.
Yeah.
Oh, what I do wonder is, would you know, the way that Spider-Man was, you know, you're playing as Peter Parker, as, you know, there would be no point in being someone other than the heroes in this,
one of the heroes. All of the Avengers.
So would it be a game where you... select your hero at the beginning out of the ensemble and then you have your own story? Or would it be like the story where you play as different heroes at different parts in the story that, you know, meet up? So, like, you have Thor's chapter, you're playing as Thor, you have
Iron Man's chapter. I think it'd be very cool to be able to take one character the whole way through and then replay as a different character, you know.
Or you can have like a selection.
I have no interest in some of the characters, for example.
Or you can have like a selection of three or more of the ensemble and switch between them at will, like in Grand Theft Auto.
Yeah, you had a similar type thing in, what is that game called? The Marvel, it was like Marvel Heroes or whatever. It was, there were two of them, something, Alliance, Ultimate Alliance.
Yes.
And there was a kind of like action, beat 'em up sort of thing, and you had combinations of heroes and their spells or their abilities synergized with each other in different ways. So, for example, if you had Iron Man and Cap, you could, like, he shoots his, like, photon beam or whatever, and Cap can deflect it with his shield to, like, make it go, like, prismatic and hit, like, a whole bunch of different people. So certain heroes synergize, others didn't. And half the fun was finding out, like, whose special abilities synergize with each other, which is very cool. But, yeah, we will keep up to date with that story as it develops. That's it for the news, but I think we're going to get spoiled soon with E3 coming up. The other one, obviously, is it's going to be, I suppose, old news by the time anyone hears this podcast. But at this point in time, we're 8 hours away from some sort of COD announcement.
Yes.
They've just gone dark on social media, and there's just a countdown. It's like at this stage about 8 hours till we find out at 7 o'clock South African time, 10 o'clock Pacific time, I believe.
I just find it hilarious, like when it comes to like AAA announcements now, how it's become like best practice to like just have a countdown timer.
Because
they just assume like everyone's something like waiting around for them to like, you know, say something important. You know, Fallout 77, what were they? They just stuck up a countdown timer.
But what I love sometimes is like they don't announce it. Yeah. But it'll be like some random website, there'll just be a countdown timer and someone is just like trolling into going, oh, I just mistyped Fallout and I hit Fallout 77 instead of Fallout 5 or whatever. And then I found this website and this timer. And it's like all of a sudden there's this countdown. Like what people are just trolling the internet looking for.
I wonder if Todd Howard was actually just trolling everyone. He just put up a picture of like something, you know, that retro TV and was like coming soon, and he just put it on Twitch and just to see how many people would tune in and like watch.
And be like, oh, shoot, like, we better build a game now. People are actually interested, yeah. Or not build a game and build Fallout 76.
Yeah, so COD, there has been speculation that this new title, I mean, they have to have a new one every year, right?
Yeah.
Is going to be sort of leveraging the Modern Warfare name.
Okay.
I think it was Jim Sterling who spoke about it. I think it was last week or earlier this week. Speaking about how at one point Activision were looking at actually changing the name from Call of Duty to Modern Warfare.
Because
the name Modern Warfare in itself was just so recognizable
that
it tested well with audiences and their graphs and scales and all these, you know, cool, like, you know, corporate shenanigans.
Focus that panels that they do. Yeah,
focus panels. And so, but for whatever reason, here we are, and they kind of stuck with it. They hung on to the Call of Duty name. We're probably going to see them playing around the ballpark again, particularly since the most recent Black Ops title didn't do as well as it, you know, thought it was going to do. I guess, you know, 7 million copies or so. Just,
Considered a failure? I thought, like, it's a no, we're saying like it's 500 a good game, million, but like, are they saying sales-wise, not a great game?
$500 million dollars in like the first day or first 2 days, and investors were like, no, bro, it's just not
not good enough.
Nah, dog.
Better fire some people.
Yeah, better fire good old
800 people.
So, yeah,
okay. But the topic we want to talk about today, though, is, I think it's something that's just like become synonymous with, it must be like this genre more than any, and that is like having a boss.
Mm.
You know, like having this, like, you know, ultimate bad dude that you need to defeat, you know, to finish the game. It's something like you don't see in any other genre. Like, I mean, yeah, we have villains in movies and that, but it's not like, it's not the same mechanic. It's not like you have to defeat a boss. And in fact, I'm going to break away there just to talk about, like, the Wachowski brothers actually mentioned it when they did the Matrix game, how, you know, you've just defeated like the one Smith, whatever, and they go, they break away to that, like, the architect's room where everything's, you know, pure white, you know, looks like an infinity curve on a photo studio. And they even go, now this is the point where Neo would like martyr himself and do the whole Jesus Christ thing, and like that's really important and to the movie and the story and all that, but like that makes for a terrible video game. Like, no one can go, cool, use your final finishing move, okay, I'm gonna die now. Like, that's, no one wants that. So what we said is, instead we're going to have this giant mecha smith that you're going to fight. And it's great and all, but it would be a terrible, terrible ending to a movie. So we're just letting you know that, like, we also agree to fight a giant robot mecha smith is a terrible idea for a movie, but it's going to be a kick-ass for the end of the game. And so they did it. But it makes you think about the fact that, like, why is there this need to, at the end of a game, have these bosses? Because, like, so many great games do.
Yeah, I mean, if you think about a video game as, like, video games now is the evolution of, I'd say, the puzzle.
Yeah.
Right? Puzzle is a series of tests, and you could say that the final boss would be the final test. Final test of everything you've learned from the start to the end of the game, applying those skills and coming up victorious, you know, with that ultimate sense of achievement, right? Yeah. You know, now that video games are a lot more cinematic and narrative driven, you know, in cinema, the big bad of a movie would be the villain. So. Yeah. So often that final test or that final sort of a hurdle to jump over is kind of personified, you know, in an antagonist, for instance.
Yeah. And sometimes more psychological than actually beating a physical boss. It's like making a decision to, for example, like the Neo thing, martyring yourself or...
Yeah. So I guess that's how we ended up with bosses in video games. It's sort of become a genre in itself now.
Yeah. I mean, there are games where that's the entire mechanic. So... Mm. There was a game, I believe, called Titan Souls, where the entire game is beating these bosses. All you have is your little dude, and you've got a bow and arrow, and you've got to almost solve the puzzle as to how to beat the boss and find its weakness and kill it. And then more recently, you've got a game called Dauntless, which is a free-to-play cross-platform game where you pair up with a couple of other slayers, as they call them, and go kill bosses. That's the entire game. It's like, you know, getting the gear and killing a boss. And so they've kind of, like, I suppose, taken one of the core features from games like the Souls games, and they've just gone, you know what people like most is the bosses, so let's just do boss fights, like, nonstop. Yeah. And yeah, fair enough. You know, as I mentioned with the Souls game, you've got a game that, as synonymous as it is with, like, deep lore and storytelling and really crazy difficulty, the bosses are like one of the standout features of Souls games.
And I mean, let's say the Souls games are pretty much like a really good example of what we're talking about here, where the gameplay loop is essentially a series of puzzles and mazes with a giant boss at the end.
Yeah, pretty much.
You know, run through a maze, open some doors, there's a boss, figure it out. You know, next 8 hours are going
to
hurt.
And I think someone described to me like Souls bosses are actually, you got to treat them like a mix of a puzzle game and a rhythm game. Because it's like a puzzle to like work out, okay, what's this guy's, the first time you meet them, what's their moveset? Like, what are they super strong at? Find out what their weakness is, because all bosses are designed with some sort of weakness, you know, like, because the cheap ones are the ones that don't have a weakness, they're just bullet sponges. You just like hit them until they die. You want the one that like, there's a opening, no matter how small it is, that's when you're supposed to like strike. And working that out is sometimes an environmental cue. You know, I think Resident Evil is one of those classic games where half the time you're deciding, is this an invulnerable boss that I can't beat and I just need to run from? Is this one that like just need to like chuck every explosive and bullet I can into it until like spot the weak spot or whatever?
Yeah.
You know, it's usually the glowing red eye or whatever. Or is it one of those, I've got to find the way to kill it from the environment? You know, is it like, oh, there's this precarious bridge that we're standing on, or like there's this giant spike above us, how convenient, you know? Often in my case, you find out it's not the bullet type boss after you spend every single round of ammunition you have, and you realize, oh, it's one of those like press this button for them to die. And
yeah,
like,
reload.
Damn it, gotta do that again because I can't continue this game with no bullets.
So yeah, so when it comes to, I guess, say like looking at the boss as looking at bosses, you know, as a sort of gameplay counterpart to the antagonist that you'd find in narrative driven cinematic stories. That brings you to titles like Far Cry, who've basically now created, you know, Ubisoft have basically created a formula around that sort of enigmatic,
psychological,
you know,
boss.
Yeah, psychological, charismatic boss. You know, like Voss, you got, you know, Ming, and then I guess the Seed family, which was a bit of a miss for me, particularly the final encounter with Joseph Seed. I did like the moments with them, the moments where it actually, you know, it took you out of the gameplay and sort of like forced you onto tracks through this interaction.
I was still humming Only You for months after. It's like,
Only You.
Yeah, every time that song would play, I was just like, kill the herd. And then even more recently with New Dawn, those two sisters. That's part of the, you have these like slightly unhinged, charismatic,
that's part of their formula. Yeah. And I guess the writing process when it comes to working out the next Far Cry game is like, okay, who is our next, you know, enigmatic, crazy antagonist, bad person thing? And then, you know, the world building and everything kind of like, you know, comes around that. And the story of your protagonist, who is usually sort of like this nameless, faceless, like blank slate, just follows along that path.
Let's be honest, the characterization of the bad dudes is far stronger than any Far Cry character like that you play. You know, so... It's almost like the hero of the movie is, or at least certainly the main actor in the movie is, or the, in the game is the is the bad dude, the ultimate bad dude. Yeah, I think for me, when it comes down to like what makes a good boss, it's something that like it's almost like a skill check, you know, like a test a certain mechanic. So for example, if a Souls game has, you know, taught you a whole bunch of you know, certain skills in that. Till you can progress to the next part, it's almost like a gate, it's like a skill check to go until you, the game gets harder from here, so like pass this boss before you can move forward. And I mean, I guess the classic in Souls is you play Dark Souls 3, that first boss, you know, you kind of like, you basically learn to parry a couple of bad dudes, you've hit a couple of bad dudes, you've learned that you can do more damage when you stab them from behind, okay, cool, and then you all of a sudden pull the sword out of this guy's back and then you have to fight him in this like little arena, and all you've had is like maybe five little minions to practice on before them. You know, so I thought that's a great kind of, Souls are one of those games where they kind of, they have the exam and the lesson afterwards. It's not a case of practice, now time for the test. It's like test time on your first day.
Like that, that werewolf in the first, you know, in the first area in Dark Souls, sorry, in Bloodborne.
Which one, the cleric beast or the...
No, there's just the werewolf as soon as you
as you walk out of the clinic.
Yeah, in the clinic.
And you pretty much will die to him.
Yeah, you still, you don't have any weapons at that point.
And you're punching like a wet noodle.
Yeah, I mean, there's certain people who've like, you know, created, you know, whole videos on like how to melee the
that first guy,
the first werewolf, you know, just
but then you just die later. It's just like, but yeah, it's that then you then realize it's like, oh, you're meant to die there because you're meant to go to the dream and get the weapons and like spoil.
Yeah, I was one of those people who got who got mucked by that because I was like, what am I supposed to do?
Okay, reload.
Like, I do no damage, man. Like, I'm just hitting him. What the? You know, my poor girlfriend was around me while that was happening.
Yeah.
And she's like, I don't know, babe. Like, you know, I just turned this game on. It's unfair. Like, I'm barely like 5 minutes in, and I spent the whole day here with this fucking werewolf.
And that was my first experience of a Souls game, and I bought my PlayStation for that game because I'd been hyped on like just the vibe of the game looked so amazing, the whole like Victorian Gothic sort of thing. And I play that, and it's just like almost buyer's remorse. I'm like, so much money on this console and this game, and like I'm terrible at it, and like I'm dying all the time. But yeah, that slow grind towards the light.
I just remember that was quite a like those are some dark days. Like, you know, I get home from work, and where I would feel excited to turn my PlayStation, I just felt this like, you know, like, sense of dread in my heart.
Like, I need to do this more out of like my other job. Like, my other job is like securing the fate of humanity.
Yeah, like I feel like I'm you know, like less of a person if I can't break through this. Oh, but my friends, you know, and I'm better than him at games. Yeah, like he can do it. Like, why can't I?
Yeah, exactly.
It's some kind of, it's a man check.
That was the weird thing, especially in that game, is that like certain bosses just had me, and I had guys who like, I like to think I'm not as good at games as I am, but like, oh yeah, I played the boss, beat him first time. And okay, you're like,
what the fuck, man?
Yeah, my controller is getting a bit sticky. But you're like, how? Like, you're not, how did you beat that boss first time? You know, so.
Like, it took me forever. Like, it took me a while to, like, figure out how the game worked. Because I'd never played a Soulsborne game before.
Yeah.
And once I, like, wrapped my head around it, eventually I got into a flow where I understood what was going on, what was expected of me. And, kind of hitting those skill checks.
Yeah.
And I remember the big one for me in that game was the ROM fights, where I spent days. Like, every now and then I'd sit down, I'd be like, okay, I need to grind a few more vials.
Mm.
So I'd go fucking just grinding zones to get souls up, to buy vials. Yeah. So I'd have, you know,
enough
resources to get like shots at the boss. I'm like, cool, I'm gonna take another few shots.
Yeah.
You know, die.
But it was such a different boss as well. You know, you talk about how the game has taught you a way of playing, which is like, you know, go in, be aggressive, butt poke, whatever, whenever you can. And then you've got this boss where the minions are actually the bear dude. He's just a giant marshmallow, basically. Like,
I tried so many different strategies of like, okay, let's go straight for him and like deal as much damage as possible. Get him down.
Oh, and then the green kicks through the phases. And then stamina bar and
pushing through the phases, but then those minions start to pile up.
Yeah.
And like they jump on you and they do so much damage. Then I was like, cool, I'll, you know, kill the ad phases, quick sticks, and trying to get on him, but it still wasn't working.
Yeah, you're gonna find a mix between like sorting out some of them and
eventually when I got him, when I did it, it was like, I think that is the best I've played in any video game ever. I hit the zone where nothing touched me. It was flawless. Like each dodge, each hit was like on the mark. I was like, not a single mistake.
Yeah.
I went fucking god tier.
Yeah.
And I beat him and I threw my controller and I almost broke it. And I screamed, and the neighbors got alerted. Yeah,
it's like when I beat the final boss in Sekiro, which took me 34 attempts.
Jeez.
And I remember even that last attempt, I was like just before bedtime, and I was like, oh, give it one more go. And it was, I didn't even sit down because I was just like, oh, I'm gonna go to bed now, so let me just give it one more try. And then, like you say, it's just that moment where you're going, why, I'm way ahead of where I normally, because you know, you're like managing.
Where I normally
like,
die, yeah.
Yeah. So like, you know, in Sekiro, you can come alive again. You've got like an extra chance and you've got your like 10 health files or whatever. And I'm sitting at like, because you beat the first boss and you go to the second boss and he's got three phases. And I'm sitting like on the third phase. I haven't used my respawn. Still got 8 health files left. I'm like,
geez, a lot of resources.
I've got a lot of resources there. And then you start like, shit, focus, sit down. I'm like, dang this dude. And then all of a sudden you start losing because you're like focusing. I'm like, no, be nonchalant again. Like,
no, because that's true, dude. It's a complete mind game, dude. And that same thing happened with me with a few of those bosses. Because when I'm taking it really seriously, that's when you get in like your own head.
Yeah, and when you start
failing.
And also you become super critical of your mistakes.
You're like, fuck, I shouldn't have done that.
And, so close. And how often will you go, oh, I'm behind what my normal par is? Like, we're talking about resource.
You're working on
like,
averages.
If I don't have five health, if I'm not on my first life and at least four health things left with the final phase, then I'm probably going to lose. So when you're there, you're like, oh, quit and restart. How often are those ones the one you turn around? Because you're like, oh, I've got no chance of beating him. Like, just let me just do it more out of exploration or practice.
It's crazy because like no other game has, I guess, or no other sort of genre of games creates this scenario where you have so many attempts at a boss that in itself becomes the experience because you're spending like 8 or more hours on like one part of the game. So you're doing things over and over again, but also being able to reflect back on your own mistakes and get in your own head about things and then work out your own averages as well of like how well or less well you're doing. And like that mental state plays a factor into how well you do in that scenario in the next time.
Well, I mean, one game, it's not a boss game, but it has a similar concept if you played Celeste where you go, it is difficult. And it reminds you at the end of when you finish a chapter how many times you died. But it also, it's quite encouraging because it goes, don't look at your death as failures. Look at them at all the opportunities you are to learn.
Yeah.
And you're going, yeah, okay, it's a little bit of bumper sticker, who lit sugar packet sort of kind of motivation. But it is one of those things of going, when you know how to pass a stage already, you're like, you're not learning anything because you're like, it's already in your skill set. But when I've grounded out certain levels on that, like where you can feel I've died easily 100 times just on the screen.
Sure.
And you're going, but by the end, the stuff you can do, because it's like you're learning new skills and how to combo them together and all that. And it's a classic platformer mix where you go, in the beginning, all you've got is a double jump. And so you can do certain things. Then you're like, oh, you can double jump and then hold onto walls and then hit panels. And certain panels only activate when you do your double jump and all that. And you can reset your double jump by collecting certain gems. You're like, wow, that gives me more abilities. Yeah, that also gives you a lot more difficult things that you can be able to pull off. Mm. And I think that game mixes that. They kind of grind towards getting skillful at something quite well.
And you know what? It actually reminds me a lot of the old sort of like roguelike platformers that we played back in the day. Like I played like a lot of Sonic, Sonic 1, Sonic 2, 3. And you get to a point where, you know, same as let's say Mario, for instance, like Super Mario Bros. You know, when you're running from left to right, you've done it so many times, you know when that next Goomba is coming out. You know that there's, you know, a brick over there that's a secret star.
You know
that, you know, there's a turtle like when you jump over here and something's going to come off the right. And then it becomes like second nature and automatic.
Well, have you played,
so you're running, you just like, you stop to let this thing go and you jump because you're just so used to it because you've done it so many
have
times.
Have you played the unfair platformers like Unfair Mario and all this stuff? Like, check them out online. They're free.
Oh, because they change.
They're free and it's unfair. It's one of those like, you jump on this little brick that you think sink, that it's a real thing, and a spike comes out. So then you learn, okay, cool, you need to do a fake jump where like you jump so the spike comes out and then you like side back and then you jump again, the spike retracts.
Yes.
But if there's ever a game that's like you win through force of erosion.
Yeah.
In the same way as like water will eventually beat rock.
Yeah.
Because it'll keep eroding. It's like you feel like you're killing your enemies by drowning them in your blood. It's like that, to be graphic, that's like how it feels like sometimes. You're going, you're going to tire out. And that's the weird thing, I guess, that people don't realize about games with bosses is you go, how are you supposed to beat this guy? He's got like 1,000,000 HP. He does 1,000 damage. I've got like 20 HP and I do 10 damage. And, you know, one hit, he just looks at me and I die. The difference is you're learning. It's not. Yes. It's not like you're playing OpenAI where it's learning faster than you are. The boss has its mechanic. It's AI. Once you learn how it works, you're on the road to beating it, where it's just constantly doing the same thing. And so the it's always on your side, you know, in terms of the odds. You might go like, the odds are stacked against me. The odds are heavily stacked for you because you only ever have to beat him once, you know. The boss can win 1,000,000 times. It doesn't matter. Once you beat that boss, you don't ever have to play him again. You've now passed that boss.
And I think also, you know, that analogy of erosion is like, quite good as well, because you know when you're in that scenario, you know, playing a boss, you know, 100 or more times, it leaves you, when you eventually like defeat it and you see that, you know, title screen like defeated or whatever, or you know, enemy defeated, that sense of erosion has left you like really raw. It's like it breaks you down to this very like reptilian sort of like chipped away version of yourself. and that's where I think the Soulsborne sort of genre really shines, because like no other game that I know like wears you down so thoroughly that it's like such an emotional experience. Like you know, overcoming that obstacle at the end of the day.
But I mean, sometimes games can have really cheap and like crappy bosses, and then it's super underwhelming when, especially if you've had a great experience in the game, and then you get to the boss, which, like you said, is the culmination of your journey and like everything you've learned and experienced, and then you get to this guy and it's just like, meh. And I mean, some of the ones that always stand out for me was like Gears of War, I think it was 3, where you have to fight this Lambent Brumac. And you've fought these Brumacs before. They're like these giant kind of like dinosaur-esque monsters, and they've had attached to them laser turrets and all sorts of stuff. Yeah. So they're super, super daunting. And so you fight this Lambent one, which is like a mutated version. So it's supposed to be even more powerful. And how you kill it is you basically hold a targeting device on its skull for long enough that like this Hammer of Dawn, which is like a satellite weapon, fires a beam and melts it. It's like, that's the boss. You're flying a helicopter and you're basically holding a laser pointer at the dude's face. And it's like, oh, cool, that's the boss. Like all the hours you spent in like a great game, all the skills you've learned, which is like the cover-based shooting, the like popping up only when it's safe, the flanking, the grenade usage, the like right gun for the right scenario.
And then someone just shit the bed on the fucking boss encounter.
It's just like, why didn't you make a boss that actually has anything to do with the game before it? So, I mean, that was disappointing. I don't know if you've got any other like shat the bed.
Yeah, disappointing boss fights. I guess for me, I had a lot of fun with Far Cry 5, actually.
Yeah.
You know, people say what they want about it. You know, for me, where Far Cry works best is in those random skirmishes, and when and all the colorful NPCs that have like, you know, reams and reams of backstory. And a lot of writing went into it. You can
it
tell.
It almost becomes like an RPG.
Yeah, like a lot of writing went into it. Everyone's so colorful and there's so much like fun dialogue flying around. There's so much personality. But then, you know, they're building these games around these antagonists like the Seed family, and like a lot of them really fell flat for me. Particularly Joseph Seed, who's supposed to be the big bad because he's kind of like the cult leader. And that final fight, I don't even know if I saw him once. I think I saw him like randomly somewhere, like I heard some voice, but it was very chaotic. It was more like kind of just like converting like the people who used to be your friends. And,
you're converting them by killing them. So
I shot them, and then like their bar came out as well, like capture the flag. But it was like
human beings,
fucking weird, man. Like, I don't know who invented that encounter. Concept. It was just strange. So it really kind of like, it was just like a very bizarre, like what the fuck moment for me at the end of a game that otherwise was a pretty like decent experience, like good experience.
Because I think where psychological bosses struggle is you're going, their strength is not in their physicality or in their power. It's a mental thing. And so how do you mentally beat a boss? You know, unless it's some sort of like puzzle, like legitimate, like you have to like outsmart them. And so, you know, for example, I think the earliest boss fights I remember, like Wolfenstein, where you're fighting, you know, old Adolf Hitler, you know, in some like Castle Wolfenstein, and you're going, it wouldn't work to fight Hitler in the form that we know. At that stage, it would be like an elderly or middle-aged, like little German dude.
Yeah.
And you're going, it needs to be Mecha Hitler in his like dual Gatling gun, like chrome bio suit, whatever. But it's a weird concept because like in real life, that's not what Hitler would be like. And in fact, what I always find really weird about those games is as you get closer and closer to the final boss, the lieutenants and the like the sergeants and all that become stronger and stronger and stronger. Like, whereas, let's be honest, in a war type scenario, if you're, there might be a lot of soldiers, but as you get closer and closer to the president, it's going to be normal dudes with handguns. The guys with like, you know, if you're ever going to find a 40-foot robotic like monster flamethrower thing, it's going to be on the front lines, like in the battlefields, not sitting in Hitler's like parlor. So it's a weird concept with games. I mean, I think id Software are just famous for that. Like, take the Quake games, you take any of those, as you get closer and closer to the Strog headquarters and the main dude, like all of a sudden the guys are getting intensely like hardcore and all that, the Doom games, as you get closer and closer, whereas you kind of go, does that how militaries work? Where like the general is the biggest badass, and then like the colonels are like slightly less badass. And
if you're just a big boy, they like they push you up the ranks. Exactly. Like, hey man, you're way too big to be in
the front line. Yeah, you need to be a general. Let's mold a laser turret to your skull.
So for me, like I guess the boss fights that I play around the most with. So I'm big into my into my ARPGs, and particularly Path of Exile. So I guess the boss encounters that I do a lot are the, I guess the bosses that you face in Path of Exile, where, you know, each act in the game has their own bosses, but then the whole end game system of Path of Exile has a number of bosses in different sort of ways of the end game that you can build up towards, that you can modify those encounters. But just the way that the company and the game has evolved over the last few years, I mean, they've got a whole team of people now like that only work on boss design. Oh, yeah. That's what they do. So when the new league comes out, they'll have like pieces of the league that'll sort of touch and speak to different audience members, you know, people who like the crafting, there'll be some crafting there for them. You know, people who like the combat, the new skills, the new shit, there's something for them. You know, and then they'll always add something for the end game. So new boss encounters, a new way to build up to a new boss fight. Okay. And they've just gotten really creative and inventive with multi-stage boss fights. Yeah. You know, boss fights that use the environment in an interesting way, where once you push the boss over to a certain phase, like the stage of the environment will change, and that'll kind of reduce your where you can stand, your safe areas, you know, add phases. So all of that has, you know, allowed the game to be in a place now where some people, you know, who play the game are only creating like boss killer characters.
Okay.
You know, there are some characters that I build that, you know, I want to, you know, get the challenge rewards for certain boss kills, but like I don't have the build that can take them on. So, you know, need a Shaper killer, you know, and some people just sit there and that's what they do all day. They do like Shaper
service. Mercenary for hire. Yeah.
Yeah, mercenary for hire. They do like boss service. So, you know, for people who want to just, you know, get their challenge rewards. Yeah. So, I mean, I've built a couple of boss killers before just to like farm certain bosses, you know, for their rewards. It's not really the way I like to play the game, but it's, definitely they're like pushing the boundaries of what you can do in like ARPGs in terms of boss design.
I think one boss that stands out as being like great mechanically, feeds into how the character is and also what you've learned during the game, always go back to Mr. Freeze from Batman. I think it was Arkham Asylum.
Yeah.
And I mean, the Batman game's all about this punching and fighting, obviously, with like tons and tons of minions. And then the rest is the kind of stealth predator type thing where you hunt the guy down using your gadgets or like the terrain and you know, get the stealth kill. Now, with this one in particular, you're stuck in this lab and Mr. Freeze is going about trying to hunt you down. And there are all sorts of ways to take him down. There's like from the gargoyle, like sort of like ledges that you can pull the guy up. There are vents you can tackle him from behind. There's things you can booby trap and all that. The difference is because he is an intellectual character, that's his, always been his strength in terms of like, you know, who the character's design is. He will learn from each time and eliminate your ability to use that again.
Wow.
So you can't just spam, okay, cool, the easiest way to get him is through the vent and I'm just going to do that over and over. Once you use the vent, he'll like freeze it up so you can't go into the vents anymore. So not only can you not use him to attack him, you can't use him as an escape route anymore.
Wow.
Once you use the ledges, he'll then blast them, like freeze them and then blast them so they're destroyed. Now you can't use the ledges. You know, once you've electrocuted him with whatever, like booby trapping the like electrical outlet, can't use that again.
Sure.
So in the beginning, it's this playground of so many things that you can do. And by the end, it's this real like puzzle of going, oh shoot, I've only got like three different things to do and they're not my strength because of the way I played the game. I'm going to have to try something I'm not good at or I haven't used before. And I thought that was perfect in terms of let's use what the characters learned. Let's push them into a space where they might not be as comfortable, but then let's also, with that, use the character's like mechanic. He's a smart dude, and he's going to adapt.
He's got a bunch of gadgets.
Yeah, 100%.
You know? And that really speaks to the Batman character as well as, you know, someone with, you know, always think of Batman as, you know, his utility belt. Mm. You know, he's a guy who's got all this utility, you know, at his disposal, and then taking that away from the player.
Yeah, and it's just ironic that pretty much in the same franchise, one of the worst bosses, because you've got then Joker, who is a psychological boss. I mean, Joker one-on-one, I know he's supposedly a bit of a good fighter hand-to-hand, but not at Batman level.
He's not the guy who fights Batman
one-on-one. Yeah, he'll fight him dirty. Like, he's the kind of guy who brings a gun to a knife fight.
Yeah.
But then it's like, you have this final boss where he injects himself with this, I think it's called Titan formula or whatever, and he turns into this giant, he basically turns into Bane. So you've got Joker's voice in Bane's body to fight Batman, but you're like,
that's so bizarre.
Then why doesn't the main bad dude be Bane? Or why doesn't Joker have some sort of like mech? Even if Joker were in a mechanized suit, would make more sense than him injecting himself with this poison to turn himself into like this lumbering Hulk behemoth thing.
When I think about Joker in terms of a boss fight, I always think about like the Killing Joke, where, you know, he's the one who will put Batman on like this horror theme ride through, you know, different stages of mental breakdown.
Yeah, so almost like don't make the boss harder, make you as the character weaker.
Yes.
And so like it's the kind of thing where a boss fight would be he's poisoned you, and so now you've got like your controls are janky and you've like, you know, maybe you hallucinate. So you think you're fighting one of them, but there's 40 of them, and you even that would have made more sense.
Yeah.
Like in your mind, Joker is this massive thing. But the, you know, this massive Hulk, because you've been poisoned. Not because he legitimately is, because that's just cheap. And it ended up being a very cheap fight, and kind of like you've had this great game and you go,
and then it turns into like a beat 'em up.
Same with Bioshock. I mean, that's probably one of the most synonymous of going, great game that's just kind of WTF on the boss. Like, so you've had, you played Bioshock, obviously, the first one. And like, you've killed Andrew Ryan with the whole, like, if you please moment. And then Frank Fontaine turns out to be the main bad dude. And he's been, like, basically coaxing you the whole way with that, like, if you kindly, you know, request.
Yes.
You've been brainwashed. Geez, manage a spoiler alert, but I think like if it's been out for over a decade. So then you're obviously feeling super dumb, and so you go and try and kill Fontaine, who's now juiced up into this kind of like blue super like, I don't know, mutant thing. And even that's like, okay, cool, the game is about like mutation, so maybe over mutated, but it's just a cheap boss. It's like dodge, dodge, shoot, duck, dodge, shoot. Like it's just there's nothing clever about it.
Yeah, no. For me, I think that kind of rings true for a lot of the Bioshock. For a lot of the Bioshock games, I don't think they understood, or at least they knew how to do like a boss fight's you know, encounter design. Those games are very much more about the situation from A to B and everything in between. Like that's where the game like is at its best. You know,
Big Daddies were good enough bosses.
No, me too.
You didn't have to have a final boss. Like, heck, fight two Big Daddies at once would have been enough of a boss. Like,
I mean, and that's what they do. I mean, a lot of the enemy types and enemy design they have in those games do feel like mini bosses in a way. Like in Infinite, those handymen are actually they do a lot of damage, man. Yeah. Scary things.
So I think sometimes it's just a case of going like, you almost feel like the need for a boss fight becomes this like checklist thing. Like, cool, so we designed this great game and brilliant, and like, okay, we got to have a boss. Just make him a mix of all the powers that we've seen beforehand and like make him do more damage than the others. Like, it's kind of like unfortunate when games have to end that way.
Yeah, but then I guess looking back on the other side of the coin, those games that do it well, you know, and they really put effort into the encounter design, it really gives that sense of finality to and achievement to like that certain block of game, whether it is a level, a stage, an act, or like the entire game itself.
Well, I think, I mean, we keep going back to Souls games, but like the amount of times the last boss is not a giant behemoth type boss, he's a like he's a 6-foot-esque character, humanoid, whatever, but like super agile and has all these crazy skills and can punish your, you know, overzealous attacks, you know, kind of like if you think of fighting games, unprotected like strikes, you know, he can punish you for that sort of stuff.
Sure.
And so like, if I think of pretty much all the final bosses, Dark Souls 3, Dark Souls 1, 2, Bloodborne, they're all kind of human-esque characters.
The final bosses.
Yeah. It's interesting that they're kind of like, that almost from a psychological point of view also plays to that idea of like you're fighting essentially everything that you've learned and all the skills you've got, we're going to make how good you should be at this game by now, and then, you know, can you beat it? But I suppose the need for bosses remains in games. I don't know what it is about it that's part of gaming culture. We've had some good ones, we've had some bad ones.
Who do you think the boss in this new Avengers game is going to be? They can't make another Thanos.
Does it not have to be Thanos? Like,
nah, I can't make another Thanos. Galactus.
You reckon? Maybe.
Yeah.
Let's I mean, look, you've got so many to choose from.
They're going to have, like, I think that was my only complaint about the Spider-Man game, not enough boss fights. There was, like, one or two.
Yeah, the boss fights were the highlight of that game.
Yeah, they were great. Yeah. You know, wasn't enough. So, yeah, hopefully more boss fights in that one.
Yeah, huge fan of boss fights. Don't be wrong. Like, I love a boss fight. In fact, I feel hard done by when a lot of games are just like, even my critique of God of War. Love that game. So it was near perfect. Love the boss fights. Wish there were more. That dragon fight. Amazing.
Dragon fight was awesome. I also thought there were going to be more.
Yeah, because that's my experience of the previous God of Wars with like with the two nephews.
Yes, yes.
I can't remember what their names are at the moment, but like,
yeah, Thor's nephews. Yeah, I know they're great.
Great boss fight. I love that. More boss fights, please, in next God of War. If you're listening, Corey, just make that happen. But yeah, thanks guys for listening to another episode of The Gaming Guru. We will be back again with hopefully more tasty tidbits as we get closer to E3.
Yeah, indeed.
But until then, stay tuned and be sure to share and subscribe wherever you can to share the gaming love with those who may be interested. Cheers for now.
Adios.
The Gaming Guru Podcast. Easy, the best gaming podcast in the world.